Well, it's a dynamic duo, we'll be back again. Nothing back with DJ, you better pack it in. You're lacking sense, trying to tangle with us. Go with the big black bullies in the back of the bus. Just smacking you up, and stealing your lunch money. You're such a buddy, you're feeling just a touch. Only by the end of the day, that's understandable. What can I say, you got strong man to be.
Gary has absolutely no idea what has happened to it. Still doesn't know.
Well, I probably would work, but fuck it.
Yeah. And then we got something.
And then we had a couple of weeks of me screaming, which is not something we want to do to our listeners.
No. I think the screaming over the top of the peak is more a tripping balls sort of thing that we need.
It's more of a Brandon Semenuk thing, isn't it? That was more his gig.
That's true. So, we're at least two or three games in.
Speaking of screaming well beyond over your peak, LA Lakers.
Yeah.
That shit's done.
I did like someone's tweet about how the Nuggets were treating it like an extended practice session where they got to try all their weaknesses out to see, you know, what little fake adversity they could overcome. Oh, 20-point deficit? Yeah, okay. We'll try that.
Just trialing game state situations. So, like, now, in this one, you've got to come back from 20 down. In this one, you've got to pretend that LeBron and AD are still good.
So, Murray, we'd like you to miss your first 11 shots and then absolutely scorch the earth in the last 3 minutes. Can you try that one? Okay.
We want you to end the professional career of D'Angelo Russell.
Not the best second last game before free agency that anyone's ever had, I would say.
No, he might get that Dennis Schroeder contract. You remember that one where he declined the option that would have got him like...
Yeah.
He designed the extension that would have been many millions and ended up signing for $2.50 in a fucking cab charge voucher.
Is he on the Nets now?
I think he was on the... Yes, that's where he's ended up last. Because he wasn't on the Raptors at the start of the season. This is after playing exceptionally well for Germany in the Euro Bastards or the World Cup, whatever it was. The FIBA tournament that was on at some stage. I can't recall.
I did hear D'Lo described as the anti-Carmelo Anthony for his he's like one of the few players that goes backwards in FIBA play rather than steps up.
Well, he stayed backwards. I think he's permanently in reverse at this stage.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you know, you rightly have sort of said, you know, let's not project too far in the future for some of these teams and some of these series while there's a whole heap of awesome basketball going on.
Well, that was more because it was literally like right in the middle of the awesome basketball. I think now that we can see the end of, I mean, the end of the first round isn't that far away for some of these teams. I mean, by the weekend, the Lakers will be facing elimination. The Pelicans might be facing elimination. Quite a lot of the teams that are in the series that are lopsided are going to be considering their options for next year very quickly.
It does feel like if you are a front office guy, you sort of had some answers to questions that you weren't quite sure on. Like, I think, yeah, like you said, Brandon Ingram in New Orleans is not worth paying the Supermax for.
No, he's basically D'Lo with more tats. Actually, no, probably with the same number of tats.
And, you know, they've got a couple of young guys like Herb Jones has taken the next step and Trey Murphy's taken the next step. And it's like, well, you've got to use that
vacuum
money.
Vacuum cleaner Daniels.
Yeah, that's right. That they need more time and more space for those guys on cheaper money to complement the guy that sort of has put enough of a stamp on a few games this year to warrant the hope that he could put together a healthy year. And like, you go, okay, well, is he ever going to do that? Well, no.
Your business plan, it depends on him doing it. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
If Zion never gets it right, the whole fucking enterprise is doomed. So
yeah, that's right. So what are you going to be? Are you going to be, you know, a BI team and be a sort of six seed forever, or are you going to swing for the fences and have a crack? And I actually think having a crack is worth it. But
well, the only downside is that you're not seeing the guys in the context of how they play around Zion in this context.
No.
It would be great to be able to say, okay, in the playoffs with Zion, these guys are a plus or a minus. All you're seeing is in the playoffs without Zion, these guys are a plus or a minus. And that might not be enough information.
No, they got some pretty good data this year, though.
Yeah, but that was with Zion not in the playoffs, because the shit is different in the playoffs when it's all centered around trying to stop the one guy. given that the one guy has been stopped by not actually being able to turn up.
It really is a bit of a referendum on that too, isn't it? Like, the regular season, they're going to have to, like, even more weaponize some way of making... Like, they're never going to make the regular season the playoffs, and I don't think they should actually try because I just don't think it's good for players to play at postseason rates the whole year. But maybe you've got to give more reward for being a top two or three seed in each conference.
But I don't see what about the regular season, what about this early playoff says that the regular season doesn't matter. I mean, what we're seeing is that the teams that were good in the regular season are better than the teams that are bad in the regular season.
And are also,
I mean, the Pelicans and the Lakers are the 7 and 8 seed for a reason. They weren't good enough.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to go home and rework it and figure out what do we actually need? Do we build around Zion? What do we need to build around Zion? Do we build around LeBron? Can we get LeBron to extend? Do we want LeBron to extend?
Well, he looked like I only watched the sort of 15-minute highlights this afternoon. But, man, he looked bushed. And he should be. He's 39 and he's like carrying a team against
and doing everything.
One of the best teams in basketball that we've seen probably since the 17-18 Warriors. And it's just like, dude.
He looked tired then. Did you hear, I think it was Zach Lowe floating the idea of Trae Young as a trade target for the Lakers? I don't know with what, but to fill the Kyrie Irving role from the old Cavs. I'm like, well, you've got a bad Kyrie impersonator and an old LeBron.
Yeah.
What does this project as? The 5 seed?
Well, and LeBron might just decide at the end of this season, I'm going to go into my Vince Carter period of my career, which he could probably do really, really well and might coincide with his son being the 10th guy on the bench.
Yeah, they can all go to Charlotte and be coached by JJ Redick.
But, like, LeBron's probably got, like, another 6 years of being a like, supersized version of Jamal Crawford or...
Yeah, he's on the Fernando Alonso plan, and I don't mean, getting subtweeted in songs by Taylor Swift. I mean the bit where he's just going to keep going until he's literally 50 years old. He'll be like Kelly Slater. Kelly Slater apparently is retiring. He got chaired off at Margs last weekend, and then he was announced as a wild card for the Fiji leg and this leg and the leg. Like, I'm like, he's never fucking leaving, is he? He's going to be doing a Champions Heat at Snapper Rocks on the weekend. It's like, even John Farnham's telling him to wind it up.
But I guess, like, if you pull, surfing's not as easy in that phase as golf, but one of golf's great traditions is the old guy still got it, right?
Yeah, unless it's Tiger, in which case he's shooting 81s.
Yeah.
Says me who would shoot 81 on the front nine.
Yeah, that's true. I want LeBron to stay in the league as long as possible.
Yes.
LeBron.
You know, my interest in basketball, obviously I was watching in the 90s like everybody was, but, and then, I hated the Lakers in the early 2000s, but when LeBron and Melo and Wade came in, that was a big thing. That was really cool. And I've been able to watch LeBron's entire career, and I don't want him to leave because that will make me old too. And I don't want to be old. Yeah.
I still think the LeBron 10-minute heat check in a, random finals game in 3 years' time will absolutely be glorious.
Yeah,
you know,
in the Eastern Conference, in the 2-7 of the Eastern Conference somewhere. He needs to get his ass back east. He cannot be in these situations where he ends up having to face that fucking scary Balkan man with his even scarier Balkan brothers. How is that, by the way? That somebody in the crowd must have mistaken Jokic's brother for just somebody, a guy he knew off television, not an actual human being. Like, do not poke the large Balkan bear. He is not a cartoon bear. He eats faces.
I've been watching The Wire, and they've got a couple of sort of Eastern European heavies in that show. And it's like, the Jokic brothers or the Jokic cousins, or, the pre-Jokic's, they're here. The thing about the Nuggets is when the machine's going, when it's really going. Like, I was trying to explain to someone that they didn't have a turnover in the second half and how hard it is to come back in a basketball game if you just don't – if you don't miss.
Yeah.
It's like, you guys can score as many as you like, but if we're not missing and we're not turning the ball over, then it's very, very hard for you to come back. Yeah. And the mirror image of this, like, the sort of the dark timeline of this was the side that everyone was saying, they're just going to roll through the Eastern Conference, no worries. And Eric Spoelstra and his little merry band of Robin Hood spoilers. Of
expendables and bit part players and people he found on the street. Dudes he found at fucking Express Fitness came back.
NBA gods, I beg you, can you please give this man a like fully proper, talented, healthy team for once to coach in the playoffs?
He wouldn't know what to do with it. He's like fucking old mate rolling, Sisyphus rolling that fucking rock up the hill. He enjoys it. Nobody ever asked whether Sisyphus actually liked his job or not. He might have been really into it. And I think Spo likes to know he has deliverable expectations. You know, he can manage them. He knows what's needed of him every day when he comes to work. He's got to push the boulder up the hill and then we'll roll it back down again. Don't think that's quite how it works.
This is going to dismay and annoy you, but I've been thinking quite a bit about NBA coaching this week.
Well, it's not going to dismay or annoy me, but it does mean that you have to hand back that $100 that was pledged for the Philo team on the basis that you would fucking shut up about fucking coaching for a week.
Well, Shasta Cameron. I will, but probably not until the NBA season.
Just not this week.
Just not this week. Because, like, a whole heap of different people are whinging about different coaching in different contexts. And I look at Spo where he comes up with a game plan and whatever it is about his day-to-day coaching, whatever he comes up with, his teams will have a crack at it, right? They might not have the talent to execute it. They might not have the raw firepower to even the playing field against those odds, but his teams will have a go at it. Now, the flip side is everyone's sort of already firing Frank Vogel. And I look at that Suns team and it just reminds me of a whole bunch of players that essentially want to play street basketball. You know, this coaching, you know, this running play stuff. This having a game plan. I just want to hoop, man. You know, I just want to go out there and do my thing. And it's like, sure, you can do that in the regular season and win some games, but you just can't do that in the finals. You can't. You've actually got to have a methodical plan for breaking down and making the other team do what, you know, what they're not comfortable doing.
Yeah. And KD is the type specimen of that because he's always been a dude who's all about handles and bag and doing the stuff that he does. And you always see that in watching the highlights of a Suns game. You see KD doing that stuff, getting free, doing those lovely fucking step back, well, not even jumpers. He just sort of rolls it in. You think, great. Then you look at the score and the Suns are down 15. You think, could you run a play? Could you engage with the idea of running a play? And you think, when was KD successful? When he was surrounded by so much fucking firepower, it didn't matter what they ran, and they still had Steve Kerr to run stuff if they needed to.
They ran stuff for a whole bunch of time, and then if it got tight at the end of the game and you just needed a basket, you had someone that was very good at getting the basket. But the point was, you had to get to that point where you just needed a basket. It's no use being down 20 and just needing a basket, because then you're down 18 or 17.
Yeah.
And then the third sort of type is you've got this really talented team, but you've got a coach that essentially ignores what's happening on with the other team and is like, no, we're just run our stuff.
We'll just plan A harder, basically, if things that plan A isn't working.
Like, if we just keep running our stuff, eventually the odds will crack in our favor. And Spo just loves those coaches.
Yeah. Like, I was immediately thinking of Bud.
Bud, Bud's the poster boy for it, but Mazzill is the same, right? Like, I was listening to Adam Morris and Tim Legler's podcast today, and Legler was just apoplectic about the fact that, you know, like, make the Heat drive to the basket. Like, why are you allowing these guys to just bomb with no one around them? Actually make them bomb with a hand in their face. They don't want to drive to the basket, so why are you letting them do that? And it's like, well, they like to play drop coverage. Drop coverage is what we do. And it's like, yeah, but supposed to figure that out, and he's game planned for that exact thing, and you have a half time for a reason. That's why you adjust.
You can probably tell them, you know, whatever you want, but if they don't want to do it, then they're not going to do it. By the way, listeners, you will have noticed Bizzo has invented a new word, apoplectic, which is a cross between being apoplectic and paralytic, which is
what I am most of the time on this podcast.
You're so angry that you can't feel your legs.
Pronunciation is definitely not one of my skills.
No, imagine
that. But it's just,
although, to be fair, as somebody told ESPN's Dominic Foxworth when they were players, if you can correct me, then you understood me. So shut the fuck up.
Oh, like, I've got a great vocabulary. I just don't know how to pronounce any of them.
No, I just sometimes the words, you know, crash into each other when they fall down the stairs.
So it's been a really interesting first round. Like, and Jamal Mosley playing his all-bench units is another great example of this. It's like, okay, that's a great regular season thing, and I understand what you're trying to do there, but maybe you should try and extend the minutes of the guys that are really good on your team.
Yeah. Should we touch on that series? I mean, it looked like Cleveland were just going to absolutely muller them, and then they got back to Orlando, and suddenly Orlando found all the points that they couldn't find in the first two games, which makes you believe that maybe they just can't shoot properly at, you know, higher latitudes or something. But it does kind of feel like they've used up all their points at once, and it might be Cavs in five.
I did like your theory of, you know, that they have so many points in them, they've just wasted 20 of them because...
Because they won by 40. But also it's a thing where, I mean, that's kind of facetious, but you do, and you know this as a coach who's taken teams to high-pressure games where you have a bunch of pressure games across the course of a week or 2 weeks, you can't be up for the entire time. Even if you're a highly paid, you know, billionaire professional, you have to modulate your effort. You have to modulate your mind state and your level. And the Cavs went into town and they weren't there for that game. They, you know, they washed that one, come back the next one. They might take, if they take the second game in Orlando, they go home, they win. End off. Gentlemen sweep.
I actually think a loss like that is a lot easier to mentally get over than the one the Lakers had game two in Denver. Like,
or even game three today where they were up and up and then they just were not up and you just saw them getting run down and it was the end of that.
It's like, what do you need to beat Denver in Denver? Well, we need 5 from 5 three-pointers in the first half from D'Lo. We need Anthony Davis to wind back the clock to, you know, bubble Anthony Davis. We need, you know, LeBron to come in the second half and play, be this pick-and-roll monster. Okay, you get all of that, and it still wasn't good enough. Like, that is just crushing.
The way they lost is kind of like a visual metaphor for the entire thing. It doesn't matter what you do, they will find a way to beat you. You'll end up fucking sagging on your ass on their bench while they're all jumping up and down around you because you played perfect fucking closeout defense and it still didn't matter.
So I actually think the Cavs can just sort of like mentally shrug and go, we just weren't.
Yeah.
Like, fair whack, we weren't up. Let's have a rest. Let's reset and come back tomorrow. I actually think it's a lot easier to mentally reset from a game like that. And you just go, man, they came out hard. They were hot. We weren't ready. We know what we've got to do next game.
Yeah, it was their first playoff game at home in a billion years. Yeah. So exactly
and the Lakers would go, well, okay, we did everything perfectly. What do we do next game?
Yeah, like, we have nothing left. We have tried everything.
Yeah,
it's not like the Cavs are like, oh, we've tried nothing and we're out of ideas. They've got plenty of options for how they beat Orlando.
And then you have the Clippers and Mavericks where
I'd forgotten the Clippers sort of won the first game. When I was watching the highlights of the second game, I thought, oh, that's the Mavs up 2-0. I'm like, 1-1? What? When did the Clippers win?
And that one feels like Ty Lue was boxed into a corner where Kawhi probably was too rusty to win you or keep you in that game enough, but you've got to play him to get him back into game, finals game form, because you're probably not going to overcome the Mavs even with Jason Kidd coaching if you don't have Kawhi running on three of the four cylinders.
Jason Kidd is by no means the worst coach left in the playoffs. I mean, he's an objectionable human being, but he is fine. And they are running stuff, and the stuff works, and they have the best defense, and that can't be just because of the personnel they have, because they have Kyrie and fucking Luka on defense. So he must be doing something, or at least he might just be surrounded by some friends who are clever.
Duh.
Is the worst coach left in the playoffs. No, actually, Mazzulla exists.
Back at ESPN next year?
I don't know if they'll have him. I think they'll need someone to replace JJ Redick because, as we've discovered, that Mind the Game podcast was just an elaborate showreel to get him hired as a head coach, either at the Hornets or possibly at the Lakers or possibly even at LeBron's Vegas team. And by Vegas team, I don't mean the Lakers Summer League team, which is the team they have right now.
Yeah, so when, like, just a little sidebar, like, that's not next year, but it's looking like the year after, hey? That's the sort of word on the street that we'll get another two sides. Because they're essentially just waiting for the TV deal to be signed.
True, but I reckon they're going to get less than what they think they're going to get.
From the TV deal or for the extra two teams? No, I don't know, man.
Well, that'll be a fixed thing, you know. There'll be a fixed buy-in for that, but yeah, I don't know.
I reckon they'll get less from the terrestrials, but I reckon Amazon or Apple are going to buy that in-season tournament for a lot of money.
Yeah, but I think the death of the RSNs, the regional sports network, and the continuing erosion of the value of the regular season product is going to make it harder to sell it to people. They're going to have to, you know, sell it
which
themselves.
Which is why you need to sell the in-season tournament for a, you know, because that is the regular season content you want, right? Because it's tournament play as yeah. well as being, it, yeah. yeah. I don't know.
But they're also going to, I mean, no one's going to bid on the fucking All-Star weekend, are they? Because
that's like Joel Embiid's, you know, left side of his face where his eye doesn't work. That's what that is.
What are you saying? It's just drooping and looks yeah. like it's had a stroke? I mean, what are you saying here? That's really insensitive.
At all.
You're so ableist. How dare you? Go after him for being a fucking flopping clown. Go after him for having to put up 50 in order to beat the fucking Knicks, who have the offense of a clogged toilet.
That whole...
What, Philadelphia? Yeah, it is a bit of a hole.
Just the whole franchise. Like, you and I are...
them as a crew, a label, and a whole fucking franchise.
The whole whinging about the refs bullshit. Like, come on, dudes. Seriously?
Daryl Morey is the perfect GM for that organization, because the organization is trash and Daryl Morey is trash. So together they can combine for a trash Voltron. Particularly with Joel Embiid involved as well. Every single person involved in that franchise can go fuck themselves. They're just horrible, whinging bitches.
Going back to our initial point, though, again...
We had
New York, yeah, yeah. New York are also getting really valuable data about the ceiling that team can go to.
The dispensability of Julius Randle.
Well, that too. But I was a little bit baffled by some of the... There was a lot of Tibbs profiles this week. You know, about how he's a gentler guy and, you know, this, but, and all his stuff about playing players 48 minutes. And I'm like, okay, but what happens when one of your starters gets injured and you've got to rely on someone on the bench that you've given 0 minutes to all season because you play your starters all the time? Like, that's just not good coaching. It's just not. It really, his like cult of playing everyone until they're essentially they have no knee cartilage. It's just dumb. It's really fucking dumb. I don't like it at all.
So you'd prefer to lose and not make the playoffs than to play your players long enough in order to win the games? Because he's dealing with teams that are probably not that good. His teams always outperform their level. So you'd rather cruise in at maybe a 7 seed? I mean,
no, I think I'd rather be a 4-5 seed and actually know what I've got on my bench, though.
Well, that was like a one game difference, to be fair. Between a 4-5 seed and the 2 seed.
That's true.
But this is what he does, and...
No.
And the dudes who play for him will die for him, and the dudes who don't play for him always vote in the coach they never want to play under, so...
And if you were the...
And I think the knee cartilage thing is overrated. I think we think of fucking Derrick Rose, and we think of the miles that must be on Jimmy Butler. Joachim Noah had played 4 years in college, and he's a very tall dude who bounces up and down a lot. It's not fucking surprising that Joachim Noah eventually broke down.
Tibbs players are that car on the lot where they wound the clock back to 300,000.
No,
I think 500,000.
Tibbs players are the miles that they say they are. It's a bit, but it is like buying an X rental. Whatever the number is,
you know that it's been
a hard number, and there'll be fucking KFC spilt in the back, and you know all kinds of bad things have happened in there.
Yeah, I appreciate the methodology of, you know, if you're going to play, let's play hard.
No, you don't, because you don't like Tibbs.
I just don't understand the... If you've got... Like, garbage time is there for a reason. Like,
I don't there is a lot of garbage time in Knicks games because they're not good enough to get that far
right.
ahead.
Big Woz sort of said, you know, the Nuggets are the best clutch side in basketball.
And which is well weird, because what were they doing in clutch games? It's them and the fuck in Chicago. Had the best clutch record in the regular season. It was like, what are fucking Denver doing in clutch games? Why are they?
Sorry, he didn't say clutch games. Best fourth quarter execution in games. Like, right, they pulled four quarters away.
That stat I just gave you was true as well, because I heard it on a different podcast.
Yeah, and someone sort of clapped back at him and said, oh, what about the Warriors, mate? And he's like, the Warriors never had to worry about a fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Their games are done by the fourth quarter, man.
Third quarter dubs was a hashtag for a reason.
The fourth quarters was the sitting down and clapping, you know, the random guy on the end of the bench, because they couldn't
it was
do that.
The Jordan Bell minutes and the fucking...
That's right.
The other random dudes who have well and truly out of the league by now. Didn't Nick fucking Swaggy P. Young play for them at some stage? Sure,
he did.
Yes.
And who's the the center that the Mavs signed with great fanfare, and Jason Kidd rang him up evidently and told him he was going to be a starter, and they waived him at the end of the season. JaVale McGee played for the Warriors.
He played for the Warriors multiple times because he went back there afterwards.
Yeah.
But this is welcome back to Remembering Warriors Dudes. Dude. Which makes a break from the constant coaching talk.
So,
you know who's a good coach?
Mm-hmm.
Fucking Finchie. Finchie's coaching his ass off. Thanks very much. Yeah. Was it Ant who said that in a post-match interview? No, Finchie's coaching his ass off. I think there's more to be said about how Finch is coaching than how Vogel isn't coaching.
Also, his rehabilitation job of Rudy Gobert, who finished like 8th.
To be fair, also Rudy's rehabilitation job of Rudy, because Rudy has done...
Yeah, yeah. But I think like the sort of asterisk on Rudy was, oh, well, you get to the postseason and he gets played off the floor. And it's like, well, when he doesn't have two turnstiles at guard, turns out that he's quite effective.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the guys that were around him, but he was basically trying to be that under-8s goalie where none of the dudes in front of him are doing shit. So he's just getting shots rained on him. He's like, good luck with that, brother.
Yeah, you would need two Wembys at the back to be able to help Donovan Mitchell and, Mike Conley in his Jazz years. Like,
weirdly enough, Mike Conley in his Minnesota years.
Yeah, and this is a great lesson about where you are in the pecking order and how, you know, if you've got the third best attacker, you can actually be a really effective defender because you only have to defend a certain amount and type of actions.
You find
and
you your
might
level.
Actually be re- yeah, you might like Michael Porter Jr. is a great example of this. Like, the dude is actually a really, really good role player. Pulls down rebounds, does all the hustle plays, but you're not asking him to go at LeBron and AD for 40 minutes. That's Aaron Gordon's job, right? So if you asked him to do that, he would probably look really bad as a defender, but in the next roll down, he's awesome. He's great. He does his job, and that's how I sort of feel about Conley. But then you also have to have the mindset of being willing to accept your role in attack as a lesser player as well. You know, there's that sort of balance, I guess, between how much time you get either side of the ball.
Well, it's also got to do with how much time you've got left, because I think Conley's actually said that. He's literally said that to the team.
Yeah.
Guys, you need to win this for me. I haven't got much time left. We need to get this one. I won't be around here for later.
I've got to go to bed. You guys wrap this up.
I'm going to have to retire soon. Could you guys wrap this up?
That has just the makings of it. Like, That's a Godzilla versus King Kong sort of battle in the second round.
Yeah, in the 2-3. Minnesota are the one team that have taken big lumps out of Denver. Now, we don't know. It's a bit hard to measure just how seriously Denver was taking it, but it fucking looked like they were taking that shit seriously.
The flip side is Phoenix is the one team that had really made Minnesota look ordinary all regular season, and how's that going?
And Minnesota just went, no.
Yeah, that is...
No.
That is a Muhammad Ali level rope-a-dope that they pulled on those guys. Because
I don't know if it was rope-a-dope. I think it's just there's a huge amount of variance in Phoenix's performance. And what Phoenix does in the regular season works fantastically well. But if someone clever... With clever people on the end of their bench, has a really good look at what Phoenix do and what Phoenix run and what Phoenix's players like to run, regardless of what Vogel wants to do, you can pick it apart. And the Phoenix will probably have a game where they do the thing that the people who pick that series, pick them to win, like Zach Lowe and Tim Bontemps and fucking name them. They just expected them to shoot them off the court. They're going to get one game like that. It might be tomorrow. Because that'll be Phoenix's chance for the Orlando style game on their home court. If it's not, they're fucked. They're going home. Yeah, they're staying home.
Then it's like the Lakers. And same with the Pelicans, right? If they can't muster now, the Pelicans' home court advantage.
I think the Pelicans are playing on Sunday, the same day the Lakers are playing.
Is it Nate Duncan? Who's the guy that we follow that tweets a whole heap of stuff about the stadiums, including the food, which I appreciate because it's one of my little...
Nate Duncan's not a stadium dude. He's one of the punishing analysis guys. I don't think he ever leaves his house.
There's a guy that does like a whole heap of sort of interesting things around basketball that's not just... He does do the basketball stuff as well, but he does like stadium stuff and shoe stuff. But he was saying that play-in game against the Lakers, there was Pelicans tickets going for $30. for a playing game.
Yeah, it wasn't full.
So I don't know how much of a home court advantage the Pelicans are going to get coming back home.
But it's against OKC, so it's, I don't imagine OKC have a huge travelling, like, I don't feel like they're like,
no,
but English hooligans of the 80s. They're not going to come to your town and rip the place up.
Like, is it going to be packed, though? Like, is it actually are there going to be enough Pelicans fans that come out to watch the game?
It's going to belong on NBA TV along with the entire Cavs Orlando series.
But that was a good little tester for OKC, too, the fact that the Pelicans did what everyone said that OKC couldn't handle, which is this big bruising post-up center. And what did JV score, like, the first 11 points for the Pelicans? And then they're just like, oh, okay, well, okay, if you want to do that, you chase Chet out to the three-point line and see how that goes. Because 3 points are worth more than two, and he's a really fucking good shooter. And they just had that calm confidence in their, you know, their ability to withstand. They obviously didn't think the Pelicans could sustain that over the whole game. And Chet's just really fucking good.
Yeah.
He sort of answered that, you know, everyone thought he might be a little bit hardenish in that, you know, once the foul getting and the drives sort of dried up a bit.
The insurance fraud, as Bomani Jones and Vinnie Goodwill call it, which I think is a tremendous term, because it's not cheating, but it is like pretending that someone's backed over your foot and trying to claim workers' compo. It's just a slimy little fucking bending of the rules to get an advantage.
But Shea's also awesome in the mid-range and awesome at passing the ball and awesome at a whole heap of other things. He doesn't miss. Like, and he is a smart enough player to go, okay, well, if they're not going to give me the foul, then I'm not going to go for it. I'll do something else. I don't know. That they feel, and the Mavericks don't feel as much of a certainty enough.
Well, they're at 1-1. Well, as we speak, they're at 1-1. Now, it feels like they've got their act together and it might become 2-1 and 3-1 fairly quickly if the Clippers can't staunch the bleeding. But the Mavs have a much better home advantage than the fucking Clippers do. So,
if the Clippers don't
take one of the two games in Dallas, I think the Clippers are not going to win the series. Yeah. So maybe we should run through these series and sort of say what we want to happen and what we think will happen. So with Dallas and the Clips, I want Dallas to win, and I think Dallas is going to win.
I want it to go seven because
what? just to make your Thunder Boys life easy when they see them in the 1-4 or the 1-4.
Yeah, pretty much. And I also think they're like an 11-year-old boy, the Mavs, in that they sort of live and die on the emotions of their superstar. And if he's throwing a tantrum, they don't do so well. And if he's locked in, they do really well.
Good Lord, you've abandoned Luka quickly. You were the biggest Luka fanboy when he came across.
I still, like, he's probably the second best player in the league. Like, he's really, really good. But
behind Joel Embiid or behind Wemby?
I got very frustrated about the defensive player of the year stuff. All these people going, oh, the Spurs weren't a very good defensive. Like, guys, you can read some pretty basic data. The Spurs with Wemby were a fucking awesome defensive team. Unfortunately, he didn't play 48 minutes a game. And on those other minutes that he didn't play, the other team scores a lot of points. That's not his fault.
Still doesn't make you defensive player of the fucking year, though.
No, but it makes him a top three defensive player of the year. Like, you can't say because... You just can't say, oh, his team wasn't very good. It's defensive player of the year. It's how you impact defense. If the numbers say you have a good defense when you're on the floor, you're a good defensive player. Like, it's not about how many wins you get. It's whether you're a good defensive player. They're different things. Anyway.
I don't know why we're talking about a fucking rookie on a shit team during the playoff chat, but anyway.
Well, because all the awards came out this... All of the awards came out. So they have announced... two of the awards or just the sixth player of the year? Is it only sixth player of the year?
I have not paid attention or cared, but I think Naz Reid got sixth man of the year.
Yeah, Naz Reid from the Timberwolves got sixth man of the year.
And I think a lot of that was based on voting that happened while he wasn't a sixth man, while he was actually a starter. So he probably got more bump for the way that he played when he came off the bench.
Poor old Malik Monk sort of got injured and wasn't playing as everyone was sort of examining their ballots. It's like, oh, yeah, Malik Monk not playing. Okay. Yeah.
And Naz Reid kind of took advantage of two people's injury, both Kat and Malik Monk. Sad for the Sactos. 2-7. We know the, I'd like to see the Lakers, like, I'd like to see one last LeBron fucking barn burner that he actually wins, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think Nuggets in 4.
I think we're going to see Rage Against the Dying of the Light in the next game. Like, I think LeBron's just going to give it all, and I still don't think it'd be
it's
enough.
It's not going to be enough.
Like, for such a friendly team, the Nuggets really get the shits at the Lakers' exceptionalism. Like that,
well,
they are-
it's not just, it's mostly Michael Malone. He gets the shits at that too. He's a remarkably petty man for a man who's had a career in, you know, trying to improve the lives of young men and make them better basketball players.
You should respect that. You've got a bit of petty in you now and again.
I don't earn as much fucking money as him.
Yeah, that's true. Mate, D-Lay's probably still going to earn more money in his next contract than you and I will earn in our careers, so...
No question.
Yeah. Do we think the Suns will light it up enough for one game, or do we think the Timberwolves are just going to clamp it?
Yeah, I think the Suns will take one in a 4-1, and it'll be a bit like the Orlando Cavs series. I can see that, you know, the Cavs will take that in 5. I don't really have a feeling about what I want to happen in that series because I don't give a fuck about either team, to be frank. I would much rather a better team came out of that to go and give Boston more of a hassle, because although Boston, we can all laugh at Boston conceding one to Miami, I'm going to say it, I don't see Miami taking another game.
Okay.
I would love the Heat to win in 7, Boston are going to win in 5.
If they do, though, if Miami take another game...
Like, don't let us get 2.
Talent and skill usually win out, but... They're not robots. They're not programs. And mindset.
Well, they melt down on the reg. They've melted down every year they've fucking played, except for the one year they made the conference final. They made the finals, in which case they kind of melted down because they were up two and lost four on the bounce. I thought that was more that the Dubs just absolutely went supernova. Whereas you think of that, the Celtics losing 3 to open that series against the Heat, and that felt like a meltdown.
If they're down 10 at the half in Miami, I reckon there's going to be some real...
recriminations.
Selfish. Yeah, like some real sort of Jason Tatum, I'm going for Kobe, or...
Kobe system bullshit.
You know, or benching Porzingis, you know, not...
Well, if Porzingis plays another game like fucking... What was he, minus 32 in a game that was a lot closer than minus 32?
I think you're right. I think it's going to be Celtics in 5. And that's what it...
It kind of has to be.
Absolutely should be. But the talent disparity is too big.
But like I said to Adam on last week, if the fucking Boston loses a single game before the Eastern Conference Finals, they should fire everyone. Because it's not acceptable to lose to teams this bad.
Who's the lead assistant on the Celtics? It's a pretty notable ex-player. Is it
Sam Cassell?
Yeah, I was going to say it's big ball Sam Cassell, isn't it?
And that's something this team fucking lacks. They have shrinking gonad syndrome whenever things get a bit sketchy.
My whole take on the Eastern Conference is wake me up when I know who's going to play the eventual team out of the West, because I don't know.
Well, I want to defend the Eastern Conference, but I can't defend Cavs fucking Magic. I can't fucking defend Bucks Pacers, which is a sad fucking collection of people. It's just two sad teams being sad at each other. It's just no fun at all. The only positive is that there'll be a game of it tomorrow, which means that we're one game closer to the end of it, no matter what that ending is. I think Giannis might be back for the game 4, but Jesus, I can't imagine this.
Oh, mate, did you hear the reports about that today? He's shooting stationary shots.
So he's that like, doesn't, yeah.
That does not sound like a person that can play against a team that has discovered, hey, maybe if we run really, really fast all the time, This bunch of old guys won't be able to keep up.
Yeah. Actually, tomorrow is the bunch of old guys meeting their maker, because it is the Clippers are playing, the Bucks are playing, and Phoenix are playing.
It does feel like the expiration date on some of these older players a bit.
Yeah.
This season. Like,
it got late early. It's really getting late early for some of the generation flip has happened so quick.
Well, I think
you know,
it's just
suddenly, you know, KD and Dame and all these guys were, and even Giannis to a certain extent, they were the moment, and now the moment has passed them.
The force with guys like Ant and Shea and Luka play, you know, the physicality and the speed and the, and like even Halliburton, you know, and Brunson, Like, all of these young guys just...
Although, to be fair, Halliburton and Brunson have been kind of poor. I mean, Brunson's been game planned out and Halliburton's limited by injury, but they haven't really had the opportunity to make the leap that they would have been really cool to do on the stage that they're on.
Well, Brunson's sort of proving that finals maximum small. It's very... You've got to be super, super, like, Steph Curry-level talented to be a small guard in the
finals. Well, that's why, you know, there's no way that the Sixers should be down in this series because they have stopped the Knicks on offense and they still lost two games.
Mm.
I would love the Knicks to win that. I got a horrible feeling that the Sixers are going to win that one.
I don't know. The Sixers just shit the bed too often.
Yeah, but they don't shit the bed here. They shit the bed in the second round. That's usually their go.
So what do we got? Four games left. You don't think the Sixers are going to do something stupid two out of the four games? Like, the thing is that, again, like, Nick Nurse is sort of removing a lot of those roadblocks that the Sixers sort of used to throw up to, like, he's doing enough smart stuff to make that not happen. Like,
sticking the stick through your own front spoke and then falling off and then blaming the referees mostly.
He's trying to remove that institutional bias, but I actually think they'd be better off cleaning house and getting someone in the back office that suits the, you know, have a go attitude that Nurse has in the coaching room, because
they should close the entire franchise and just start again somewhere else. It's just a waste of time. so you think the Knicks might pull this one out in six or seven?
Yeah, just because I think, you know, Joel will tumble into something, or Max. I just don't think they can get out of their way.
I mean, half his face is falling off, and he scored 50. So it seems like, you know, injuries, actual injuries, instead of the pretend ones that he has whenever he you know, falls over, seem to help him a lot. But there's still two more games left at Madison Square Garden, which seems to matter.
You know, the Socceroos had that theoretical voodoo curse on them for a while. Do you reckon Embiid's family have offended a witch doctor somewhere, and every finals is just a dude sitting in Africa in a tent over a fire sticking pins into a
This into feels a doll incredibly racist about a proud American basketball player. He clearly has no relationship with Africa because he turned his fucking back on it.
We call that a banquero on this podcast.
Yes, Vafanculo banquero. Actually, if it wasn't up until yesterday's game where he scored a billion points, was it today's game? It really looked like Grant Hill, pulling the okie doke on him. It looked like it had really broken him. The fact that he'd recruited him away from Italy and then didn't take him to the fucking Olympics anyway.
Yeah.
What other series we got? Bucks Pacers, I think, is going to go long, and I think every single one of those games is going to be fucking horrible. And it's going to be decided by either one team being injured or the other team being injured.
I actually think the Pacers are going to win that. I think Giannis is going to look at that and go, yeah, maybe I'll come back in game five.
When has he ever done that? He doesn't do that. Remember the time he had his knee hyperextended? It looked like it was in reverse, and he came back and destroyed. Oh, of course you remember, because it happened to your fucking team.
Yeah, I do remember.
And it's for stuff like that I want the Bucks to win, because the fucking playoffs are better when Giannis and Dame are in them.
Yeah.
Because some of the best moments of playoff basketball in the last 10 years have been either Dame or Giannis or both. But Chris Middleton's questionable for tomorrow's game. Ugh. They're falling apart. They're old and they're falling to bits.
Is Dame just old? Because he's been like Superman in first halves and then just kryptonited in the second half.
He does have a guts injury. He does have this this core injury. It's a bit like the one that ruined a couple of his last seasons in Portland. His second to last season was totally fucked by this kind of core injury. I think it was a sports hernia abductor, you know. I think that's basically limited him a lot for the last couple of years. But he is trying to carry the entire fucking team. And while that was okay in the regular season, like literally they would win when he played and they would lose when he didn't. Yeah, I think we've found the limit of this team, and it's not just that they have Doc Rivers coaching them. But at least if they have a horrific loss, then this Doc Rivers bullshit will end and they'll get in a actual coach rather than somebody who plays one on television.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams that are going to lose in the first round that I have a
there's an equal number of teams that will lose as win. It's very, very democratic in that way.
That I sort of have a clear idea of where they're going to go and how they're going to refresh. The Bucks, I just don't know. Like, you can't trade anyone because none of them have value. Who's trading for Middleton or Lopez or Bobby Portis or...
Sign and trade Dame to the fucking Heat, where he should have been in the first place.
Yeah, probably. I guess so.
Or back to Portland so he can be with his kids, because I think that's also underpinning a lot of Dame's malaise, is he's deeply personally unhappy, which is kind of sad.
Well, I hear there's going to be another Northwestern franchise starting up soon, so perhaps he'll find a home there.
Oh, look, they'd love him in Seattle.
Yeah.
They really would. Brilliant.
Like, because there's no...
Send him and KD up there, because KD started there. He could finish there. You know, that'd be it'd be a lovely touch. Yeah. Speaking of teams that should be in Seattle, the OKC Thunder, that'll be four, won't it?
Except the Pelicans have some players that just do not fucking want to give up. Like, Herb Jones and Daniels and Alvarado and Larry Nance, like they're like Knicks West, those guys.
Yeah, and but don't you feel that the Pel's best shot has already been shot? It was that.
Yes, that first game.
And they absorbed it, and that was that?
Yep.
Yeah, I just kind of feel like we'll take that and we'll move on, sort of thing. I mean, I'd like to see that a series. I'd like to see Design come back, for fuck's sake, but it's not what we're going to get.
Well, That was another encouraging thing. The difference between the year that they played Phoenix, you know, where they won the play-in and they played Phoenix, and all the stuff out of Zion's camp and from Zion was very, you know, prevarication and, oh, you know.
It's another big word.
I'm doing everything I can. Whereas the quotes this week sound like a guy that's just desperate to come back. Like, he sounds much more like Giannis than he did 2 years ago. Like, I don't know what it is about him, but I reckon he's, whether it's a maturity, like just an eight, you know, brain chemistry's changed a little bit or what it is, but he sounds like he's really bought into being, he doesn't, like I thought he might be a better version of a Ben Simmons, where it's just, maybe he just doesn't want to play. And I don't get that feeling about him now. I just feel like...
He does seem to need to be embarrassed in order to be motivated, which is not ideal.
No.
Whereas Ben Simmons can't be shamed into performing, which is...
No, you know. Nothing seems to motivate him. Like, that's...
Well, shame certainly doesn't motivate him. He's like Donald Trump.
He is literally a coach's worst nightmare. He's like this super talented dude that you're just like, oh, man, if you just could care a little bit, you would be so awesome. And it's like, no, don't really care.
This is a job. I turn up to my work and I do my job and then I leave.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when you professionalize sport. You get professionals.
Yeah, that's true.
You don't get people who wanted more. 2-7, we've said those. And the 3-6 brings us back to the Minnesota Phoenix series.
I would not be shocked if Minnesota sweep this.
Yeah.
I sort of feel like they got the bit between their teeth now and they're just going to hound Phoenix into.
Yeah.
I can't see the big shooting game because I just don't think. I don't think the Timber Puppies are going to allow them.
No,
to have
their
that
defense
game.
Is too fucking good.
Yeah.
You know, the bigs and the old guards are too fucking good at this. And I suppose from what you want perspective, I want to see Phoenix. I want to see something out of KD. I don't want him to go out like this. You know, Booker and Beal, you know, I don't really give too much of a fuck about. But by the same token, I also want Minnesota to be at their absolute best when they take on the Nuggets, because that's going to be, as you say, Godzilla versus Kong shit, and we want them to be absolutely apex when they do that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think it'll be the same with the other side of the West. I think the Thunder versus either the Clipper or the Mavericks will be a fascinating clash of styles, and neither team really have a massive, amazing front court player like a Jokic or an Anthony Davis to be able to hurt the Thunder, or even a Gobert, right, to sort of, you know, go through the slimmer Chet.
What, you don't think Ivica Zubac is that man?
I think he's got a bit of Valanciunas to him in that he can have really good periods, but you can't sort of hang. I remember when...
He's not going to have a LaMarcus Aldridge 40 game.
I remember when Baines, when Ayton went down and Baines went from being, you know, a 15, 20-minute a game player to having to be a 35-minute a game player, and he had like an awesome month. And then he basically hit the wall and started getting little niggling injuries.
And then he faded in the shower and been stuck in Brisbane ever since.
Yeah, well, that's a little bit unfortunate. But there was an article out of one of the Suns beat writers that literally talked about that. You know, when you have to make the jump from being a 15-minute a player game in sort of, you know, two short 7-minute bursts to being a starter is such a different toll on the body. And that's where I feel Valanciunas and Zubac, you know, they're really good for chunks of offense, But if you're asking them to be the, you know, the hub of the offense for 42 minutes a game, they're just not going to be able to do it.
No.
It, you know, and that's why the Kawhis and the Paul Georges and the Lucas and the Jokic's, like, that's why they are superstars, because they can do that for a really long time. You know, it's pretty nuts. I just wanted to say one last thing about Jokic. Can you remember him? When's the last time you can remember him having, like, an absolute shitty game? Like, not the Nuggets losing, but him personally having, like, a 5 point, 2 rebound, 2 assist game.
I thought he'd put up a stinker in one of the games. Like, it might have been the Bucks beat them, or someone from the Eastern Conference beat them. And Jokic was really average.
I think it was like 16-6-5.
I mean, it was,
which I guess I'm is sure bad.
Aaron Baines would have liked that stat line. Yeah. But, you know, you've got to judge him by the metrics that he's put up and by the contract that he's given. And that wasn't good enough on the night.
And the funny thing is, like, Steph Curry has held the mantle for a long time of being the best conditioned player in the NBA. I reckon Jokic might have him now. That dude does not stop running. And
plodding.
It's plodding, yeah, but he does it all the time. And I think
he's a diesel. He just keeps, yeah, he just keeps chugging.
He really delights in those last sort of 6-7 minutes when Davis is just absolutely gassed, and he's like, "Oh yeah, no, I can still go at this level for another 5 or 6 minutes, dude. You don't want to come with me? Oh, that's interesting."
Yeah, Lucas got that to him too. He always looks like he's fucking gassed and he's exhausted, but he's always,
yeah, but he just keeps going. Yeah,
there.
Yeah, and that was what Curry had, right? Curry had that ability to just, like, you know, it'd be double overtime and he'd still be running around fucking ghost screens without the ball to spring Clay open. Like, I don't know. It's very hard to explain to players that conditioning matters, but it fucking does. It really does.
Well, particularly when you're pointing it at Jokic and saying, look at this example of perfect conditioning.
Yes. Oh, no. He's not exactly – he still doesn't look – like, he does not look like Aaron Gordon, right?
Yeah. Don't look at him. Just watch him. You know, it's not the shape we're looking for. It's the end product.
Yeah, it's the 3 minutes to go and there's a made basket and he, like, hands the ball off to the point guard and, like, sprints. Now, his sprint is not exactly Usain Bolt, but he fucking hammers it down the court. Like, you know.
And to be fair, you can look like Jokic or Latrell Mitchell or fucking Dwayne Leverock. If you can still be performing in the last minute of the game, it doesn't matter what you fucking look like. It doesn't matter whether you look like an Instagram model or the Michelin man. It's what the end product looks like.
The motor.
Yes. It's the motor. That's what I tell myself.
That's right.
Can we get out of here? We've been talking basketball for an hour, and I'm sure the listeners are bored to shit.
All right. Let's go. Let's come back and talk some tunes.
Let's do that. This was Bulls Podcast. I was Doc. He was Beezer. We'll be back again next week.
You know it's a good week when you've got to wind me up to the other way around.
I run out of beer, man. What are you doing?
Gary has absolutely no idea what has happened to it. Still doesn't know.
What's your unavailabilities like the next couple of weeks?
No, I think I'm okay for a little while.
All right.
Definitely, I'm out for 2 weeks, July 11.
So that's the actual World Cup, yeah?
Yeah, I think World Cup starts July 13 or 14, depending on whether we've got to play the first day.
We'll have to get you to drop a fucking voice note of life and say, you know, how things are going and how it's the mood in the camp. You know, all that kind of shit. Because there'll be people who are, you know, I mean, I think our sports listeners are invested. Well, literally, they're monetarily invested because I think a few of them have tipped some cash in.
Yeah, quite a few. And I'm fucking incredibly grateful because with a couple of pullouts, we will now, I think, officially be the youngest ever Opens team to ever play a World Cup because they literally changed the rules for this team after Asia Pacific Youth Cup. There used to be a cap on how young you could be to play.
Yep.
And because all the kids went so well at Asia Pacific, the international board sort of went,
we don't want to discourage this. Yeah.
Well, it's stupid, and we're not a professional. You know, we're not the ICC. No one's paying us, and we're making a whole heap of work for ourselves that we don't actually need to do. Like, the game's moved on enough that just let them play. Like, and there's
also an extent of they know that they've got good professional people around them.
Yeah, that's right. So yes, it's a very, very young team, but the good thing about young teams and like a generation of young players is they tend to grow up together. OKC, like, you know, I think football's got a whole, you know, football history is littered with golden generations.
Oh, fuck, the class of 92 at Man United who have never stopped talking about themselves for the past 30 years.
Well, I was thinking there's a little bit more international, isn't it, where, you know, you have a bad campaign, so you sort of reinvest in youth for the next campaign and then, you know, that crew go through together.
Oh, well, the golden generations are more of a cliche than a reality now, though.
Yeah.
But it's more likely to be like the kids of a certain generation who all came through the same academy, like the Man United's class of 92, which is Beckham and the Neville boys and all those guys, or various generations that have come through Barcelona.
Then the next World Cup is in your neck of the woods, so...
You're not staying at my place. We're having renovations.
We won't have the same, you won't have the same issues with people being able to play. Like, everyone will be available, and if this core can stay, like, even if you've got 75% of this core staying together, having a whole bunch of 15 to 18-year-olds get 12 games of experience in a World Cup just means the next time when they're, you know, closer to their primes, that they're not 22-year-olds playing their first World Cup, they're 22-year-olds playing their second World Cup, which is a massive difference. You know, it's a little bit like the playing game for OKC. This run would be a lot different if they hadn't have had that play-in game last year, I think. You know, we would be doubting them even more, and they might even be doubting themselves even more without having had that experience of playing that playing game.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how they react when they... I mean, it's a bit fucking first take to say, but it'll be interesting to see how they react when they get their first proper punch in the mouth, because they haven't had it yet, and from a team of equivalent talent, or at least comparable talent.
Yeah, and all these kids have had that punch in the mouth, because for all
just
of
you
the
give
highs-
it to him, because that's how you coach, with old school violence.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That Roy Masters phone call I had really stuck with me. No, like we went out, like for all we won the semi-final, we got our asses handed to us in the final of Asia Pacific Cup. And that's something that we can sort of lean on to go back to. It's like, well, we've still got to get better. We can't.
And like we were talking about with the fucking, with the Cavs and Orlando, you got to meter at your effort. I mean, you can't burn all your psychological matches in one game and then have nothing left for the game afterwards, even if the game afterwards is the last game of the fucking tournament.
So interestingly, New Zealand mixed, they lost the Trans-Tasman, which was like 2 weeks before Asia Pacific. But then they had this sort of crop of young players coming through that were going to be the fulcrum of their World Cup side, I guess. And then they lost to us at Asia Pacific. And so now probably the greatest player to ever play touch for New Zealand is coaching the New Zealand World Cup mixed side. And it's just it's a really interesting reaction, because New Zealand used to dominate mixed. Like, mixed used to be the most important of the three opens divisions to New Zealand.
Is that because their women had an advantage over the women of other places?
No,
just because
I think there was a cultural thing.
Oh, they
because
just cared
mixed
more.
Is a lot more. Yeah, they just cared more. It was more open. There was a lot more flair and sort of like daring and like risk taking in mixed. And then they went away from it. So it's interesting.
They got very Australian with it.
Yes, that's right.
They coached to the fucking syllabus, and they liked it.
Well, it's a little bit like Australia going through having a New Zealand rugby coach, right? And New Zealand sort of went through that phase, not necessarily having an Australian rugby coach, but having a coach that knew the Australian style,
having an Australian culture.
Yeah, so. I'm a little bit worried that all my tape on New Zealand is absolutely fucking useless, but the other thing I found is it's very, very hard to change the way people play. Like, if they're used to playing a style, you don't just change that overnight, and I'm finding that...
Not in an amateur sport, no. You need reps and fucking shoot-around time, and you don't get that when you... You know, if everyone's being paid a lot of money to be there, then absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good thing. It's sort of like coaching an NBA team, it's like, well, we have to learn as we play because we don't have practice time.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's a little bit difficult. Like, how do you explain a concept to someone over a text message? It's not easy.
You run and then they run and then you do the thing and then yes.
Yeah.
Mind you, you could just do what fucking JJ Redick is and just draw it badly on a whiteboard while talking quickly about it and expect that to make sense.
I really like listening to his stuff.
Have you spent any time with Mind the Game?
No, I've sort of been saving that one because I feel like it's not something that it's not time dependent.
It kind of is because they are dealing with, you can see like the first couple of episodes were after a particular game and I remember that game. And then now they're okay. Talking sort of it's whenever they catch up in the same town. It is, it's more interesting.
We might get a lot more of it in a couple of days' time.
Well, I don't think they'll stop doing it once JJ is LeBron's head coach, but.
I was more thinking we might get Draymond Green style finals breakdowns once LeBron's not actually playing.
That would be cool as hell because it is, although I listened to it as a podcast, so it's a bit hard to picture the, because on the video form, they actually splice in people doing the, like, you know, the split cuts and the fucking, and the so floppy actually, and the whatever.
It's actually better on YouTube.
Yeah, they're doing it. Well, you can listen to it as a podcast, and if you know the concepts, then you can imagine. But what JJ comes out at the start and explains some of the terminology and the terminology that LeBron uses, because he often uses slightly different terminology for stuff that, you know, might be known by a particular thing in most of the league. So it's kind of a little kind of decoded beforehand. But the whole thing, it's a very good and engaging podcast, and LeBron is full of great stories, and JJ Redick is full of, without being too self-aggrandizing, has full of his own good stories and is good at pulling the stories out of LeBron. And they're doing it because they say, oh, yeah, we love the game and we want to encourage people to talk about how cool the game is. But it does feel like two basketball nerds just trying to show off how much fucking basketball they know. And that's why I thought this is definitely about JJ auditioning for any and all head coach jobs that are out there, and particularly ones that involve LeBron James. But very much, it's worth listening.
And if they mesh that well, LeBron as GM and him as head coach might not be a bad idea.
Well, it'll be LeBron as head coach because LeBron is clearly bright enough to be a good head coach. The problem will be the relating to the players. It'll be the old fucking Wally Lewis, the Maradona effect, the Magic Johnson effect. He failed as a head coach for exactly the same reason. He could see the pass that you should have played at that moment. Problem is that you couldn't play that pass because you don't have the fucking skills.
I wonder what it is that I would give a lot to be able to sit in on Spoelstra's stuff for a week, because there's just not very much out there about it. Like that, for all of it, like that, there's more out there of sort of memes about Heat culture than there actually is about the way they go about their business. Yeah. It's a pretty closed shop. And even that, I was reminded because there was a little bit of out there about that letter Presti wrote to the Boston Globe back in when he was 16. And I can't remember who it was, but someone said Presti would absolutely hate that information about him being out there. Like, he would just despise that there is, like, even that intel about the way that they do their business out there from a 16-year-old, which really should mean nothing.
I don't know. I mean, Presti, the way he's described to people, he seems like a very chill dude.
I think he's a very chill dude.
He's a fucking deadhead, and deadheads are always a bit weird.
I think he's a little bit like Nick Nurse was asked about, like, have you learned any, have you got anything you learned, like, having to plan against Joel that you can now use, that you have Joel in your team? Like, is there things that you can do from being on the other side? And he said, oh, yeah, absolutely. And they're like, oh, yeah, what is it? It's like, I am absolutely not telling you the answer to that question.
You can watch the video and figure it out your fucking self.
It's a really good question and like, great insight, but there is, like, you are getting nothing from me on this.
See, I think you should fucking, you should start listening to that JJ and LeBron podcast because they will get into that stuff. They'll, like, okay, this play here, you know, and they'll pull apart all kinds of stuff and talk about stuff that's happened that year as well as historic shit. So I think it is massive nerd shit. And I think it would be your areas.
Yeah, I am a massive coaching nerd, as has been indicated by this podcast. All right.
Yes, and you're it, and you better give Cameron his $100 back.
Thanks, Doc. Yeah, that's all right. I'll catch you later.
Cheers, mate.